Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, looks like things are coming to a head, folks. I told you that eventually the feds would come after me and my family, and it has begun today. And so within the next couple of months, you can expect to see some action on top of this hill, because we will protect our rights by all means available to us. And I mean with all means, no exceptions whatsoever. And in the next couple of days or next week, and we're not going to go off the air as planned next Wednesday, now that this development has occurred, we will be right here broadcasting every single day. And the day that you don't hear 101.1 FM, you'll know that they succeeded. We now continue with part two of Jay Reynolds and Gardening.
Are good. I see nothing that could really help out. I have plans to build one, but I just haven't. Yes.
I've been doing this, and I wonder if this is a good idea. You know the cheap buying near the tin pan?
Oh, yeah.
Well, whether it's pollinated or not, at the end of the season, sometimes you run into you. And we've been buying a ton of that. Is that a good idea? Yeah, if you
Okay, vitamins. One other thing. While we were on break, Bob mentioned he didn't really understand how you started the sweet potato. You actually break off that vine, plant it maybe 2 inches deep at the least. Although this spring, my sweet potatoes, we had an early spring. They hadn't vined as long as they usually do. They hadn't sprouted as long as they usually do. I planted some that were probably only half an inch long, just little bitty nibs, and they all grew. So you do have to do that. One other thing you can do, if you have a long enough season, you can plant your first set of sprouts. They can grow up for a ways, and then you can break off that tip and plant it again. Y'all lived in the tropics. I've seen when I farmed in the tropics, in the Virgin Islands, I've seen a fellow plant one row. He had a big field. He planted one row of sweet potatoes, and every 2 weeks he would plant another one off of that one row. And every 2 weeks, and so every 2 weeks, when he harvested, he'd go to market. He had fresh stuff every 2 weeks, all the time. So they produce, they reproduce very easy. It's just a constant thing.
Yeah.
They'll strike root anywhere along that stem. Anywhere.
Okay.
Oh no, you leave the tip, the growing tip above ground. Yeah. You can take that and water, and it'll grow a house plant for you too. Pretty. With the next subject is vitamins. We can't store these vitamins in our body. You can store some minerals in your body, but you can't store vitamin A and C. You need to have them all the time. So it's very important that we have a source of that. You might wonder how do you get it in the winter? Well, you have to keep them fresh, or can them, or preserve them. And I have a whole section I'm going to speak on food preservation. But what I've got here is a nice chart. It came from my grandfather's book, and it gives you the amount of vitamin A and C in these crops. They've got other vitamins, they've got minerals in them too, but they categorize. They tell you a general idea of how many of each type to plant. I figure the more the better. Once you have excess, you can. And what you Can you can sell or trade. Over on the right, there's another section of the chart that shows you that in general how many and how much to plant per person for fresh use and for processing, which is preserving. These figures, I don't know. It depends on how productive your soil is. If it's more productive, you might be able to get by with less. If it's less productive, you might have to double it. So, I can't say for sure. When you look at the abbreviation, you'll see like about the fifth one down, cantaloupes, it says 3 to 5 hills. What that is, commonly cantaloupes are planted not in a long row, but in individual hills. You can plant them in a long row if you want to. It's just a customary thing. I'm not sure that it's really necessary to do it in hills. I've done it both ways. When you see plants, they mean pre-started transplants, PLTS. It stands for pre-started plants, like in broccoli. You don't have to pre-start the plants. Depends on your climate. You can plant seeds right down the road, but then you should later thin them out. And I've got another page on that coming up, how to space plants, how often to have a plant when you plant them. But generally, this is a pretty good guide. I haven't ever seen anything like this before, except in my grandfather's book, which is 40 years old. Your cantaloupe, it depends on your spacing of the hill. If I was to make a hill, I would probably, a cantaloupe for instance, I would probably put 3 seeds in there, or maybe more, but thin out later to about 3. It depends though, it's something you'll have to figure out yourself. I'm going to let you figure that out.
Well, I know when you say 3 hills, are you talking about 3 plants? Are you talking about...
No, in general, a cantaloupe, you probably plant about 3 seeds. You get down to pumpkin, you might only do 2, because pumpkins put out so big a leaf and they grow so vigorous, probably they need a little more room than cantaloupes do. But if you look on here, for instance, I think they have pumpkin on here, don't they? No, I don't see pumpkins on here, but one thing I thought for sure they have pumpkins.
How about watermelon? Do you like those?
I do. As far as watermelon goes, I like the small ones. I've got a smaller family, 4 people, and especially if we don't have refrigeration, a small one is more convenient. You can eat it all in one sitting. A 200-pound watermelon, what's 4 people going to do with that? But for a party, it'd be great. I was going to mention, they don't mention pumpkin on here, but they do mention winter squash. I was almost sure there was pumpkin. I missed that, so I transcribed it by hand. Anyway, I was surprised that winter squash has much more nutrition than pumpkin. You would think it would be the same thing, but it's not. Winter squash is a little different family, and they're really good. Just running down, look at the first section, vitamins A and C. Their vegetables are pretty high in both. Does everybody know what mustard is? It's a green. There's different kinds of mustard. The one that is the best is not as peppery and hot. It's called tender green. And that thing, you won't believe it. In 30 days, I have a crop of that. And it's great. You can follow something up in the fall after you finish the other crops and have that green. And it's very high, as you see. Collards, everybody know what collards are? Does anybody don't know what collards are? Well, a collard is a cauliflower that didn't go to school. It's a coarse member of the cabbage family, it makes leaves that you can pick the side leaves, and it will continue to grow. You can keep picking it. It's very frost tolerant. Collards will probably stand 20 degrees frost or more, even for days at a time, and survive. I had collards all winter this year in my garden, and we got down to 5 to 8 degrees, and they survived, just open.
You say mustard greens are kind of hot?
Yeah, especially in a hot time of the year, In the fall, they're a little better, but there's different kinds of mustard. And let me tell you, the tender green mustard is the one that you want to grow, because the others will be much hotter.
I've got a Mexican iguana, yeah, it's a favorite food.
Mustard green?
Uh-huh.
High in vitamins, you know. Well, they're not hot. How do I describe it? Well, it's spicy. Trying to think of the.
Just remember, when everything crashes, you want to feed your iguana. Here it recommends
the same plant all winter. As you pick off the leaves, they get taller. They'll get up about this tall and have a thing of leaves on top. And if you look on here, you heard Michael talk about broccoli a lot. Look at the vitamins.
Yeah.
Which one has more? Now, broccoli does have some other things that collards doesn't have. And I think it probably is higher in some cancer preventing vitamins or whatever it happens to be. I don't know. He used a word for it. I forget what it was.
Probably
antioxidants.
Yeah.
But
doesn't like it, so it must be good.
Yeah.
There's a real simple rule to follow as far as vitamins in fresh, leafy, green plants, and not necessarily green. But the darker the green the leaf is, the more vitamins, especially vitamin A, in the food, or the yellower the leaf or the vegetable is, the more vitamin content it has.
Exactly.
While you're on the subject of the Gort family, I got a funny little story. My great grandfather used to take a little nip on the side. My great grandmother didn't like that. That was a no-no. Whenever he would, if she'd catch him, well, she'd make him sleep in the barn. So he took to propagating gourds. And you know, gourds, you can't eat them. You might make decorations on Halloween or something. But it took the whole family years to figure out why he was growing gourds. After the plants were dry and the gourds were just laying on the ground, he'd drill a little hole in the bottom, fill them up with whiskey, and put a little cork in there and set them back down. That was his stash. So the gourd got a lot of uses that you may not have thought of.
Every seed used for canteens.
Well, going to the second group, number two, high in vitamin A. Look at those and tell me, everybody knows all those. Maybe Swiss chard is a little strange for some of you. It's a green also, goes from seed. But look at that carrot. If there was one plant that I would recommend everybody learn to grow, is carrots. Because you can see by far, they're the tops in vitamin A. And take a guess on, I want to hear three guesses on how much per acre, with good practice, you can grow of carrots. How much do you think?
I've seen the Imperial Valley, so I'll say
a
lot.
Let me have a guess. How many pounds or tons per an acre? Y'all are right on. It's from 10 to 20 tons per acre. That is just incredible. And in a home situation, you might even get more, because you can squeeze things in a little better and you don't have to use mechanical harvest. So carrots are, and carrots keep good too. I keep carrots in the ground all winter long in my climate. If you wanted to, you could probably cover them up in the north. I think Ron mentioned that. They cover theirs up, and they keep all winter. So what's the storage? There's no storage problems. The only problem with carry is fine seed, and it's a little hard to come up. You need to make sure they stay moist and have a soft soil to be able to push through. And you really can't beat carrots. They taste good, too. They taste a little different. Depending on your soil, they may be a little stronger. They'll have a more carrot flavor than what your commercial ones. Of course, those have been sitting around for weeks or months, too.
How many of you live in Southern California? If you find out when they're harvesting carrots in the Imperial Valley, you know where that's at, right? They'll sink rope out of there. And go out there when they're actually pulling them out of the ground, loading them up in the trucks. And any of those dirt roads, or even the major highway, you just drive along and you can pick up bushels and bushels and bushels of carrots that are dropped off the trucks because they just mount. They get so many carrots that they don't care if they lose them. They mount them in the trucks until they're falling off, and they fall off for miles. And I'm serious. When I lived in Southern California, I used to drive over there and fill up bushel baskets full of carrots and take them home.
Sometimes I've seen huge dumpsters load them out in California. Cattle eating for a long time.
Sure. Now, there's one crop here that's not listed. I couldn't get any good information on it, but it's something you might consider, and that's sugar beets. It's kind of a strange idea, but once in a while, we'd probably like to have some sugar for a holiday or something, maybe. You can actually grow your own sugar with sugar beets, and they're good cattle feed, too. They grow huge, 5-6 pounds. Low?
You grow a lot of those in Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Carrots and sugar beets are excellent deer bait, too. You know, if you want to pull in a little extra meat or something like that, we'll pull you some carrots and dig your beets out of the pile or something. And put a double backflip, too.
So they're good bait for hunting.
Yes.
That's good. We're going to group number 3, which are high in vitamin C. Most people know about tomatoes. It's the most common crop grown. They're pretty easy to grow. One thing I might mention, though, there's two different, in general, there's two varieties of tomatoes. One is a determinate and one is indeterminate variety. The determinate varieties grow to a certain height and then they stop. They generally bear a shorter time because they only grow so tall. The indeterminate will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow until they get sick or it gets frost, which in my area, that's the end of the tomatoes. But they have different uses. For instance, if you wanted to can, you might grow a determinate tomato, because they all come at once, and you can get your cannon out of the way. But for fresh eating, you might want to grow an indeterminate tomato, because if you have them longer, they just continue along the way all the time. Tomatoes are probably one of the easiest vegetables to can, if you're going to be canning them. They don't require as much cooking. They're fairly safe. And they're pretty good canned, too. They're pretty good if you don't have anything else. They're pretty good. The other green vegetables next. Some people don't know that beans come in either bush form or whole form. That is that some grow only 2 feet high and bare. Some grow on a pole. They can grow up. They can grow way on up. And the bush beans are sort of like the determinate tomatoes. They grow fast. You might only get 1 or 2 or 3 pickings at the most off of them, and then they're finished. The pole beans grow taller. They continue to bear less at one time, but for a longer time. So they have different purposes, and there's different advantages. If you can't bend over and pick them, the pole beans are nicer. A lot of people might not want to do that.
Green beans.
Green beans.
Four. Just ignore
them. Okay. Ronald mentioned that's the job he hates the most in the garden is picking green bush beans.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind it because I like to get them out of the way. Get them finished. And the bush beans grow faster. They'll bear faster. So if you've got a cold climate where you have a short season, that might be a good idea. Y'all in California, you've got a whole different situation.
You grow anything anytime?
Just about. There may be a few limitations.
If you have a greenhouse, it's zero.
Mm-hmm. How about okra?
Yeah?
You ever had fried okra?
Yeah.
It's a little better, isn't it?
You know what I used to do? I used to grow them. My parents would make me eat in the kitchen. And they'd be doing it for like a dog and eat in the kitchen. So I used to draw my okra behind the refrigerator. And when we moved it, I had a big pile of behind the okra.
But notice, compare beans and okra on this chart.
Yeah.
Something to think about. They're higher than green beans. They're higher than green peas. So that's something to think about. I like okra. And in the South, it's not only traditional, but it tends to grow in the hottest weather when a lot of other things might just wilt away and die. Jim?
I think another good point about okra is that it grows in just poor soil. You don't have to have sprinkling the fresh soil.
Right. It will grow anywhere. He says it grows in poor soil, and that's true. It will really grow. Now, if you grow okra, wear long sleeves and gloves to pick it, unless you're really tough skin, because it's a prickly plant. But
it's not friendly. It looks like a soil.
My mom is very
important
meal and
do the kind of sauce. Okay. Have you ever eaten Campbell's vegetable soup? Anybody ever eaten Campbell's vegetable soup? You were eating okra. You didn't know it, did you? That adds something to a soup, believe me. A soup is something, if we're in a survival situation, soup is easy to cook. You can put all kinds of things in it. And soup is a mainstay for subsistence living. It really is, because you can make it so many different ways, add so many different things to it, and okra makes your soup much better, believe me. If you ever had Campbell's soup, you were eating okra, you didn't know it. They grind it up a little bit, but you were eating it. The starchy vegetable, group 5. Any questions on that?
I've got a question on the chart in general.
Okay.
It talks about 8 to 12 feet on the, I guess, the length of the rows, or, you know, for instance, on the finished egg structure.
Yeah.
What's the spacing on the plants?
I'll come to that next. I'll start passing around now. Any other questions?
How do you grow cornmeal?
No.
Any different grain?
Wait, it's a special corn. You don't use sweet corn for the year. Field corn.
Okay, the question was, how do you make cornmeal? Just a minute here. Cornmeal is either flint or bent corn, and you grind it, but not completely. Milling or grinding can be done fine or coarse, and usually your cornmeal is just not quite as fine as flour. You can buy corn flour, and that's what they make tortillas with, but cornmeal, like for cornbread, that's just not quite as fine a grind. I use my Vitamix, and sometimes it's hard to control. It's not a real grinding machine, even though it will grind almost anything. But that's all it is. It's just ground up. I didn't mention popcorn, but it's good. It keeps, it grows, and everybody knows how to make popcorn. The problem is, where are you going to get that oil? Butter or something. Oil is a problem for, that's one of the things that I haven't been able to perfect a good idea of how to make myself. Never pursued it. You could get it from soybeans, you could get it from corn, peanuts, sunflowers, but it takes quite a bit. Can you do that in California? Okay. Well, that, those people are going to have it made. Olive trees. I don't know that it could be grown in everywhere, though.
I think it's got to be more of a Mediterranean long
term. Mm-hmm. I bet it does. Well, the, Karen, what was your question?
Why don't you have already turnips on this list?
Well, I don't know. What I will tell you is that I was surprised. I like turnips. I grow turnips. My family doesn't like to eat the greens, but I do. Turnips, I believe, when I started looking it up, turnips were not all that high. I was surprised. They're not all that high in vitamins. But I still grow them because they're very tough for winter use. And when I was outside, I had a little story to tell about turnips. Where I live in Izard County, Arkansas, northern Arkansas, down in the southern part of the county, not in my village or town area, there's a little town called Guyon. And Guyon, Arkansas, has a mysterious person that nobody knows who it is. And when his nickname is Johnny Turnipseed. And along in the fall, all of a sudden, people will find turnips coming up in their flower beds. And where somebody's bulldozed a field, cleared a field out for grazing, all of a sudden, an acre of turnips will just come up. And there's somebody walking around with turnip seeds and casting them around. And they're one thing that I know for sure that can come up almost on their own. Now, Diana tried it. It didn't work, but I don't know.
It did. I tried it when I knew it was too late for them to throw the sewer, but they did. I did get them germinated.
So, and you mentioned radishes. Radishes, I think they probably could have gone on this list. Now, I didn't make this up. I got it out of a book. But radishes are, they're pretty good. There's different kinds of radishes, too. Recently, it's become more available. Is the oriental radishes. These things grow this big. That big around, they call them daikon, is one name for it. And they're supposed to be pretty good. I've really never eaten them. I've eaten all radishes. And they're good. They're quick. Right, Karen? 30 days or less for little ones. So if you like radishes, I would say go on, sure.
What is wrong with that?
Well, I don't think so. I've grown in the tropics, and I've grown in Texas. And one type of lettuce that is probably the hardest to grow is iceberg lettuce, believe it or not. Lettuce is a fast crop, but it's a crop that tends to go to seed. And bolt is the word for it. It lengthens out and throws out that seed. If you were to choose lettuce, a lettuce crop, find out what grows good in your area. If I could make some suggestions, oak leaf is a type of lettuce that it's shaped like it makes a leaf shaped like an oak leaf. It's not very big, but it's real tolerant to that bolting. That's something, if I was going to select lettuce, look for something tolerant to bolting. They'll say bolt tolerant or long picking or something like that. Lettuce is not that hard to grow, especially the leaf lettuce.
Like romaine lettuce.
Well, plane would be medium hard to go, then the easiest is a soft, buttery leaf lettuce that doesn't make any head at all. It just kind of spreads out. But the way I grow, I'll go into how I grow lettuce a little bit. Yes?
Jay, I just wanted to mention that when you're talking about... the vitamin content and stuff, that you're talking about some raw food. Anytime you cook food, you're going to lose a lot of those
vitamins. I tell you, I cut that off of this because it wouldn't fit on the page. But at the bottom of this chart, they did mention that these vitamins were for raw vegetables, except those that are not normally eaten raw. So when you look at soybeans or potatoes and probably sweet corn, I believe those figures are for cooked. So, and probably mustard, that'd probably be cooked form. And since, I bet, since this was done 40 years ago, I bet the broccoli was even cooked. Although, a lot of people eat raw broccoli now, too. Carrots are probably uncooked. Yes?
People that are on cancer-type diets, if you want to do the same, you have to follow it. You're cooking in a room that destroys enzymes. That's another reason that helps in the digestive system.
Yeah, Jack's comment was that if you eat raw vegetables, you're getting the most out of it. And that's a fact. There's no denying that. So, heck, it's even easier. And you don't have to go light that campfire like you might have to. Survival. Other questions? Okay, well, that next page that I passed out, the first one that talks about the difference between farming and gardening. That's a little chart I made up showing you different spacings for an intensive form of farming, which is gardening, and the standard farming method, which would allow you to even ride a tractor in most of these cases between the rows. Since on a survival basis, you might not have that equipment. And after all, who wants to, you might not have the land to grow in a large-scale style. And in some cases, the intensive growing is even becoming more used by farmers. When I show you these figures for gardening, what I'm talking about is planting by the square foot, and this chart came from a book that's called Square Foot Gardening. It's pretty popular. And the basic idea for doing that is to use the soil to its fullest extent for backyard gardening or for intensive gardening is what they call it. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead along with that one, I'm going to pass out. Or did I? Did I pass out one from First Soil Fertility?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we'll go into that now. In your garden, you really need to first start off and get a soil test. Even if you're not going to farm it now or do anything, at least plan a place that you're going to garden and get a soil test. That's the first step. You really shouldn't even touch it unless you know what you're doing as far as the soil goes. And in the soil, you've got different nutrients. The major ones, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Now, I've gotten this written down so that it tells you just basically what it does for the plant and how to know if you've already started a plant, if it's deficient. Nitrogen is mostly used for photosynthesis. What photosynthesis is how the plant takes sunlight and produces energy. It's a solar energy factory is in those leaves. And don't try to grow a garden in the shade. it won't grow. I've seen a lot of people that planted in the shade. The more sun, the better. It's really true. Even 100% sun all day long. In the tropics, the people will say, well, it's going to be too hot. It can't be too hot. If you can get the water to your plant, it can't be too hot or too much sun. It really can. So the most sun, the most growth. Some people that grow indoors leave the light on all the time, night and day. Some plants that's not good for, and that's kind of special. But I was looking at the package of seeds that Jack has in a can, and I noticed they had sweet Spanish onions. And here's an example of sunlight. You know that the sun length of day is shorter up north, for instance. In the far north, the days are only, they're much less hours than further south. When you get to the equator, the day length is almost the same as the night year round. Some plants are key to that length of sunlight. For instance, onions is a real good example. There are two types of onions generally, short day and long day. And wherever you live, you'll need to find out. And I tell you, I can't remember which way it is right now, but northern people will need they'll need a short day, that's it. They'll need a short day onion. If you grow a long day onion up north, you might never get onions. Because that plant is key to the fall. When it knows its season is done, it bulbs out and makes it stores up food. If you plant a short day onion in the south, you'll get an onion about this big, right in June probably, and that's all. So you want to get the right variety for the amount of sunlight. The other one that I can think of that's sensitive to that is corn. And I think that's one reason why they grow different corns north to south. Your trace elements is something most people don't know about, and that's something only a soil test will be able to tell you. And so you can go out and buy fertilizer. And does anybody know how you rate fertilizer? Have you ever heard of 10, 15, 5 or something like that? That is N, first number, P, second number, K, potassium, the third number. And that stands for, if you have 100 pounds of that fertilizer, you will have, say you're using 13, 13, 13, which is real popular for some reason. But say you're using that, 100 pounds of that fertilizer has 13 pounds of each element in it. That's how we get those numbers. Now, myself, I use both natural and commercial fertilizer. This year, I use no fertilizer at all on my garden. One part of it. The other part, I use commercial fertilizer. I have one plot which is 5 years building the soil. It's like I said, it's halfway to chocolate cake, and it's coasting this year because I built it over the years. It's just able to coast. The only crop I added anything to was spinach because it's a heavy feeder. So I added a little bit of that 13-13. I have another plot which I've just started 2 years, and it's very sandy. Sandy soils are hard to build up fertility. It washes out the fertility in sandy soil. So I'm using 13-13 this year, but I've got about 2 dump truck loads of compost that I've made to put on this winter. So next year every year I'll use less. But you should put something on every year unless you're really sure what soil you have. In a survival situation, you're not going to be able to go out to the feed store or garden shop and buy this fertilizer. So if you look on here, your nitrogen, the best source is either manure or compost. And I'll get into compost at the bottom here. But manure is good for almost anything. If you add manure to your soil in enough and large enough amounts, you won't have a problem. Potassium is also known as potash. That's another way to look at it. And wood ashes work real good. They don't last very long. So you will have to put it on year by year. But in a survival situation, most of us are going to have some wood burning involved there. So we'll have that. And if nothing else, burn some wood from a campfire.
Would those wood ashes tend to make lye if you put them water through them?
No. No. You can make lye with wood ash.
Yeah.
But spread on the soil, no. Let's see, what is lye? What's the point of that?
If you're worried about getting lye in your soil,
yeah.
No. Until the advent of commercial fertilizer, manure and wood ashes were used in every garden and every field in this country that produced wonderful crops and vegetables for a couple of hundred years. No, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I haven't had that happen, but you can make lye, and if you wanted to make soap, you better save your wood ashes and keep them dry, because soap is going to be something you would need. And you'll need some sources of oil or fat to make that soap, but you need wood ashes to make lye.
Is animal manure better than human?
Human manure is equal to hog manure.
Okay.
And as far as your manure goes, I'll give it to you from strongest to weakest.
Just remember one thing, all manure is good for fertilizer. There are some that are stronger than others. But if you use human manure, you run the risk of spreading disease.
Mm-hmm.
They use human manure almost exclusively in Japan. If you're buying vegetables that came from Japan and you don't properly treat those vegetables, you stand a good chance of getting some kind of a human transmitted disease.
And they don't eat much salad, right? They cook most of all of it.
Yeah.
So when it comes to potassium, phosphorus, rather, you notice, remember yesterday Miles was talking about the buffalo bones? Well, that is a source of phosphorus, his bones. And it doesn't take as much as you might think. Now, your phosphorus in the... is slowly released generally. Plants don't need a whole lot of it, but they need it steadily. And if you just grind up some bones, that'll work. Steel mill slag. Most of us don't have a steel mill, but you got them in California. You got them in the Northeast, upper Midwest. And the slag from that is perfectly good fertilizer.
I've got a lot of heavy metals. In steel mill slag? I mean, bad stuff.
Well, I don't know. I guess it would depend on what kind of steel, what was in there. That's a good question. I can't answer. It would probably depend on where it came from and what impurities were there. Well, maybe I didn't realize that. The book, I've never used it, but the books that I consulted, I was looking for waste sources for fertilizer or things that you could get that may be available without a commercial sale, and that was one that they recommended.
Be careful about that, especially if it's recommended by the government. They also recommend uranium tailings from uranium mines and radioactive waste from nuclear processing plants, and things that still have low-level radiation output over hundreds of years, and they used to tell you that low-level radiation exposure didn't hurt you. But now we know that it's one of the most deadliest forms of radiation that there is, and it's most likely to cause cancer.
Makes great tobacco.
We also know that that's one way they've been killing people who smoke. They have been putting uranium failing mining ever since they started uranium mining in this country on the tobacco fields. And of course, that radioactivity is picked up in small amounts, and you're smoking it. And your lungs get that radioactivity in, and you die. So if you're a smoker, that's something to think about.
Well, I didn't research very deep into that slag, and that's probably a good subject to check on. I didn't mention granite dust. Where would you get granite dust? Any idea?
Any mountain.
That's a good one. People that carve gravestones out of granite, or if they mine granite in your area, it's a no-brainer. But I haven't been able to pick it up yet, but my local gravestone engraver says I can come and get it by the big tubs full.
All along the road in California, it's all deep full of granite there. They have granite dust everywhere, rains down, and the big trucks come on all up.
Well,
all over the place.
Oh, so it's decomposing off a road cut?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's another substitute that you can use if you can't find granite dust, which they do have commercially available, by the way. You can buy it by the day. I don't have the address of the supplier right off the top of my head, but you can. You see the volcanic ash around here?
Yeah.
If you take that and crush it, it's very easy to crush.
Yeah.
We've got basically the same thing as granite dust. And we'll produce fermented vegetables. Bob can probably tell you places in Hawaii where Japanese people came in and bought areas of cinder land covered with cinder that nobody else would use. They went in there with a big bulldozer and crushed the cinder and planted crops, and they're getting record sized vegetables just from raising it in the crushed cinder.
From what I understand, one of the richest farmland found after Mount St. Helens went up. I mean, plants are growing there. In the whole San Joaquin Valley, many, many millions of years ago, there was a huge explosion which blew the whole mountain range out. So all that ash from there is what San Joaquin Valley, where that was such a rich, rich farming area.
One of the biggest problems with our food supply now is that we've overfarmed the land, and this is not an exaggeration, and it's not some wacko environmental statement, it's true. We have produced so many crops from the land that we've depleted the mineral supplies in the land so that now we're eating vegetables that should be packed full of all the minerals that we need and trace elements, and they have very, very little. And so that equates to us not having the required minerals in our bodies. So everybody should really be taking mineral supplements if you're eating vegetables that you buy from Safeway.
Well, you know, in general, soil is formed by different ways. Some of your best soils are closer to the weathering process, soil weathering from closer to the weathering from rock. And that's an example. You're talking about granite dust would be weathered mechanically by a machine. I live close to a rock crusher, where they crush rocks for roadbeds and so on. And one part of the process, and it's real fine stuff, and I used a lot of that in making potting soil, and it really seemed to help. There's just something there that is not washed out. See, the next section is on lime, and it's interesting that your western soils, which have less rainfall, do not need lime, they're alkaline. Whereas your eastern soils with higher rainfalls are acid. And the process from that is your atmosphere contains the carbon dioxide. As your water droplets fall through, they become slightly acidic. This acid rain is natural, believe it or not. Some of it may be man-made, but it's natural too, because all your caves are formed that way. The reaction of carbonic acid and limestone will eat away a cave. So it's something that's been going on forever. But lime is important. Calcium builds your strong bones, you hear that. And calcium is deficient in any acidic soil. And to some extent it might be bound up even in alkaline soils. One of the things that happens when you use compost is slightly acidic, with a substance called humic acid, and that actually will help release the calcium to a usable form for your plants to be able to take it up. That's one of the benefits of compost that most people really don't understand. And calcium is real important. It makes up the cell walls of a plant and makes that plant strong. It'll, it, A wheat crop without calcium, the wind can blow it down easy. Corn, it could bend over easier. And calcium, you need that for your body. And they say more and more, is the more calcium, the better. Mm-hmm. As long as it's natural, I think.
Women need a lot more than men.
I don't, and actually, if you don't take the supplements, I think you're always going to need calcium. The most you can get from what you eat. And calcium is pretty easy to get too. And again, it's ground rock, limestone, gypsum, different kinds of white chalky rocks, oyster shells even. Any source of lime. And you can tell, if you get a soil test, they'll tell you what kind of lime you need to put on, like if you need it. Lime needs to be done ahead of time. It releases over a slow time. Don't expect to get an effect if you plow your ground, put lime on, and plant. You need to do that in the fall or months ahead of time. So that's something, even if you're not going to garden for survival now, you can get your soil started. And I would suggest that everybody, if you plan to have any idea that you're going to do this or be able to do this, go ahead and get started now. If nothing else, try that week when you don't stand, you don't have anything to lose. If you lose it, it doesn't work, well, you can still buy your wheat now. Later on, you might not have that opportunity to fail. It might be critical. There's a lot of other things you could plant now, which are generally called cover crops. If you talk to your extension agent, they will call it a cover crop. You could use clover, or what you're doing is you're getting your soil ready to plant. You're getting it in a proper broken up to what you need. You're getting your fertility right, and you're also, by using a cover crop, you're smothering out weeds, which could give you trouble later on. A good idea for a cover crop is if you're not going to be harvesting this stuff, would be a combination of things. A legume, which is a big member of the bean family, will add nitrogen to your soil. That's another source for nitrogen. And you remember Michael was talking the other day about combining crops together. In nature, you seldom have one crop that grows by itself. So in a cover crop situation where it's not critical to be able to reap this wheat with a machine. My neighbor did a real good cover crop last year of clover and wheat together. But it depends on where you live. You might have better luck in the south with black-eyed peas and buckwheat, or some combination is better than a single one for a cover crop.
You can also think about a dual purpose too, because some good cover crops also, toward the end of the season, you make good grazing for animals.
You bet. And then you're getting double, maybe even triple, because what if the animals leave behind?
Yeah, you get
that. An animal can take a raw carbon material, and within hours, turn it into fertilizer. There's no factory that can hardly do that. Just within hours.
I'm the cook show pretty good.
Have you heard of pH? pH balanced shampoo, things like that. Well, that refers to the, just to make it simple, it refers to either acid or alkaline. Now, I've got a little chart here showing you which crops prefer which. In general, you can grow anything around that neutral point. However, and you have to make a compromise most of the time. In order to control the pH, in order to bring it more towards alkaline, you add. Anybody know?
Lime.
Lime. To bring it more in the acid is a little harder. Any ideas how you can make soil more acid?
Compost.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah.
Sulfur. Sulfur will do it, because then that sulfur mixes with water, it will form a sulfuric acid.
You can also use vinegar.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's serious. You can put vinegar in a spray bottle, and you can just spray light soda vinegar over the soil, and it's just enough to.
Now, it's easier to bring a soil towards alkaline than it is to bring a soil, an alkaline soil towards acid, because generally the alkaline soils have so much calcium, it's really hard to do it. But if you had a terrible alkaline, an alkaline soil, even, you got that around here, you might have to do something. Compost is a good idea, though.
Well, that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. And in case you didn't hear the announcement at the beginning of the broadcast, looks like the war is going to start pretty soon right here on this mountaintop in the Round Valley of Arizona. Caught a United States Marshal trespassing on our property today, and we ran him off. And, of course, he and his buddies will be back. And we will protect our rights with every means at our disposal. And I mean every means. If everybody had been willing to do that for many years past, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in today. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. You've been listening to The Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow at the same time for another episode of The Hour of the Time. We now return you to our regularly scheduled broadcasting.